Good morning. My name is Kelly Richardson McBee. This is my first time doing this, so please be gentle. I'm a relative newcomer to the Manhattan Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and the Manhattan-Fort Riley area. I'm also a pagan. I started my path in Wisconsin, and I've been a pagan for a little over 15 years. So, what is a pagan? Well, if you asked a group of 35 pagans to define it, you'd probably get 62 answers. The united theme, however, is that a pagan is a person that follows a pantheistic, nature-based religion. The rest is pretty much just details, I'll bet very important details. The reason why I'm speaking to you today is that a majority of Northern Hemisphere pagans recently celebrated Beltane on May 1st. Beltane is a fertility rite which celebrates... Oh, thank you, darling. Can you sit? Beltane is a fertility rite which celebrates the union of the god and the goddess. Modern Beltane celebrations are marked with maypole dances, choosing a May king and queen, making flower garlands, and slipping off to bring in the May with your beloved. At Beltane, we look at this lovemaking and sex as the unity of the god and the goddess to bless all of life and creation with fertility to continue on. The idea that sex and fertility is celebrated so blatantly in one of our holidays can be quite brow-raising to some, especially when it stands in stark contrast to other religions where sexual expression is limited to simply procreation. While there are many reasons for celebrating sexuality in paganism, one of the most succinct can be found in the Charge of the Goddess, which is an invocation used to celebrate the feminine divine aspect. Sex, sexuality, and pleasure are addressed by the goddess herself in several lines of the charge. Sing, feast, dance, make music, and love all in my presence, for mine is the ecstasy of spirit, and mine is also joy on earth. Also, let mine be the worship in the heart that rejoices, for behold, all acts of love and pleasure are my rituals. Rachel, sit down. So when the goddess herself tells you to get jiggy with it, you better believe we're going to go along with that wholeheartedly. Sex and sexuality are tricky subjects, so rife with contradictions. Yet we as a society are not exactly comfortable talking about sex openly, but everybody is so interested in what everyone else is doing in bed. I mean, just look at the tabloids. We are sexual beings throughout our lifespan, yet it is difficult to wrap our heads around the notion that it includes young children and the elderly too. We understand that sex, while necessary for the continuity of the species, is looked upon as a necessary evil that should be performed as quickly as possible with as little pleasure. Yet, our anatomy is designed for that very purpose. We are said to be created in God's image, yet enjoying our bodies and what we do with them is sinful. So today, we'll be looking at sexuality throughout our lifetime, the sacredness of our body, and how sex itself can be celebrated as a sacred act. And please pardon my children. Thank you.
I thank Kelly for those wonderful opening words for us. And now if you would join, stand as you're able and join in singing the opening hymn, number 345, "With Joy We Claim the Growing Light." Good morning. I'm Katie Kingery Page, your convener this morning, and I'll be joining Kelly Richardson McBee, who's the real brains behind this operation. We'd like to welcome all of you today and a particular warm welcome to any of you that may be new friends to the fellowship or first-time guests. As we always do each Sunday, we'd like to give everyone here a chance to voice their joys and concerns of the week or of a longer period of time, those things that may make our heart heavy or light. So please, if you have a joy or a concern to share, raise your hand, and Jessica Seaver will bring the microphone around to you.
I'm Sarah Banner. As many of you know already, my brother Eric and Emily welcomed their third little girl last Sunday, Maya, 6 pounds, 3 ounces, and she is super cute.
Yeah, that's great.
My name's Rob DeLong. I'm relocated here this November, I guess, and this is the first morning that my family's been able to join me. We're weeks away from being reconvened in Manhattan, finally.
Hey, that's great.
And I'm Enel Forrester, and a great joy that my son Kent and my granddaughter Anna are visiting today. And we hope to see the rest of the family next Saturday to celebrate 3 birthdays. Kent's, Beth's, and little Brooke, who will be 5, my great-granddaughter.
I'm Jane Pelletier, and I have a joy that I sold my house. Absolutely no effort. It didn't even have to go on the market. We were targeting next weekend for the market. There is a little sadness tinged in there because it's going to go to rental. We've been there for 43 years, but I live on 9th and Bluemont, and obviously that's what's going to happen. So at any rate, it was great not to have to show it and all of that. So
Jim Chanteau. My youngest daughter, Jill, who was here a few weeks ago, now lives in Columbia, Missouri, has been looking for a job there and just was offered and accepted a job at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Columbia. She's a social worker, and that's a perfect job for her.
Well, Jane Pelletier's number 43 is resonating with me because that's how long I've been teaching at K-State, and I'm done.
All right.
Whoa. So,
I officially retire at the end of this month, but the work is over. So that's a joy, but also a concern in certain ways, too. But
yeah, hi. I'm Eric Thompson. A few of you know my parents, Chuck and Dorothy Thompson, and we're in the process of relocating our family back here to Manhattan so our kids can go to school here, me and Zach, who don't want to say anything because they're very shy. But anyway, it's really nice to be back here, and we're just visiting. So.
Dick and Judy Cattell, and we're welcoming our daughter for the first time in a year to visit us on Monday. So we've really been looking forward to that.
it just occurred to me, I should remind everybody, I hope you've all voted for the school bond, for the school issue, you received the ballot if you live in Manhattan in the mail. So if you haven't mailed it back, you can take it and you next time you go downtown before June 2nd and hand it in and save us, the taxpayers, 50 cents plus because we don't be paying the return mailing. So I just wanted to remind everybody.
Thank you.
I have a joy to share also. Unless, I'm sorry, was there someone else? I don't want to miss if there's another person out there. I have two joys, actually. One is that my daughter's godmother, Kathy Bilanowski, just drove into the parking lot from Kansas City and is joining us here today. Will you wave, Kathy? So we're really glad she's here. And I have another joy, a really deep joy for me. I've got two brothers. They're my only siblings. I'm the only one in the family who's, quote, unquote, a breeder. And in the spirit of our service today about sexuality, we learned recently that my younger brother, who's the young age of 33, has finally decided to have a child with his wife. They're expecting a little baby. So we're so excited. Yeah. So for all of those joys, we're very grateful. And also for any concerns that may have gone unvoiced here today, those things that weigh heavy on the heart and the mind, we will hold all of those things, hold them up together during the week and share the load as we go forward. I do have a few announcements to make today. Of course, I direct you to the announcements in your order of service as usual, but in addition to those announcements, Ann Cowan has asked that I mention she needs someone to handle the fair trade sales next week on Sunday during the service. She won't be here, and Jennifer, who generally is her backup, also won't be here. So if you're interested or available to volunteer, and those sales happen sometimes before service, but I know after service is generally the time that those are very active, please see Ann Cowan to volunteer. And then Jessica Sievers also has a brief announcement.
One of Reverend Michael Nelson's going away presents will be a framed picture of this. And what I would like everybody to do before you leave today is I'll be at the card table, and I would like you to ink a thumb and put your print somewhere in the circle. And there are baby wipes provided to clean up your fingers afterwards. And I think I'll bring this again on Saturday next week, but please try to get that done today.
So now we'd like to invite all the little people up to the front for the story for all ages. Kelly Richardson McBee will lead the children in the story.
I'm not sure how many of you can see this. It's kind of a small picture. But this is a maypole. Lots of people dancing around it. How many of you are old enough to have danced around a maypole in school at one point in time? Quite a few of you. They don't really do that anymore, sadly. The story that I'm reading today is based on a ritual that was done by a Cubs group in Fort Lauderdale, and it's called How the Maypole Came to Be. So, gather around, and I will tell you a story about how the maypole came to be. Once upon a time, a long ago, maybe not a very long time yet ago, there was a springtime that no flowers had bloomed. It was the grand festival of Beltane, and all had gathered to celebrate. Yet the plum trees and the cherry trees showed no delicate blossoms. Can you imagine trees without flowers on them in spring? No. No, it's kind of sad, especially with the apple trees when they're not blooming. It smells really nice. No daffodils had pushed up from the cold ground. No buds had formed on the roses. Now, if everybody remembers, spring is a time for flowers, and it smells really nice, doesn't it? Now, no lilacs had perfumed the air, no poppies opened their bright petals to the wind. Everyone stood in silence, wondering how to proceed. They all recognized that something was wrong, but no one was exactly sure what it was. As the people stood in circle, a small voice from a young girl rang out from the crowd. "Where have all the flowers gone?" she said.
No one seemed to know the answer. No one felt like celebrating either, since there were no signs of spring. Now, the wise woman of the village had also come to the gathering. She was well respected for her knowledge, including the cycles of life. The people looked to her for healing and comfort in times of need. The wise woman stepped forward and put her hands on the young girl's shoulder. She said, "Some of the love has gone out of the world, and some of the earth spirits are sad, and the flowers have disappeared. But with the right kind of love, you can call them back." Well, what is the right kind of love? Well, let's see if we can call it in. Let's all hold hands. So can we all hold hands? Grab somebody's hand. Doesn't matter whose. Just grab a hand. Grab a hand or two or three. Okay? So the people all hold hands, and in turn, they called out some of the things that they love. The librarian said, "I love to read." A young boy said, "I loved my dog. I love my dog." The woodsman said, "I love my trees." What do you love?
I love Legos. The earth.
You love the earth. What do you love?
Books.
You love books? What do
you love? Legos. My sister.
Nachos.
No. Yeah! I love nachos too. How about you? What do you love?
My mom and dad.
Mom and dad. What do you love? Mom?
Yes.
What do you love?
Kitty cats.
Kitty cats. How about you?
Cookies.
Cookies. All good things to love. So think about the things that you love in your life. So all the people held hands, and this went around the circle, each one in turn mentioning one kind of love. She apparently loves princess dresses. When the circle of voices was complete, the young girl asked again, "Do you think we have found the right kind of love?" The wise woman held up her magic wand, and I think my daughter ran away with it. Whoop, I'm sitting on it. She held up her magic wand. And at the moment, another voice could be heard. "There really is no right kind of love. The goddess blesses all forms of love, just as long as it harms no one. So whenever you join together in a circle of love and trust, you call me." Appearing in the circle was a young woman gowned in white. Her hair was crowned with all the flowers of spring. "Who are you, my lady?" asked the young girl. "I am the goddess of spring. You and the wise woman have called me back from the other world with your circle of love." "Then please, lady, how do we bring the flowers back?" "Here is what you must do. My tree of life is but a dead stick, but you can bring it back to life. You must take a ring and place it on the top and tie ribbons to the top of it. This is the circle of rebirth, and here are the ribbons of love that I bring you. Tie them to the circle, for they represent the many forms of love that exist in the world. Love for your mom, for your dad, for nachos, for Legos, for books, for everybody. And then you must take these ribbons and dance around the tree. You must wrap the tree of life in love, and the flowers will bloom again." And so the people built the maypole as the goddess instructed, and they danced all day. As they danced, the delicate blooms, the blossoms appeared on the trees. Daffodils pushed up from the grounds, and buds appeared on the roses. Lilacs perfumed the air, and poppies opened their bright petals to the wind. And when the dance was over, the goddess said, "I must leave you, but the flowers remain and remind you to honor all forms of love. And every year when you dance the maypole, I will be here, whether you can see me or not, for in that way I am like all forms of love. Now the flowers remain throughout the whole summer, and ever after that, when spring came, people danced the maypole." And that is our story for today. So please feel free to come up and grab a flower if you'd like, little people, and take it with you.
Go in love, our hearts go with you. Go in joy, our hopes go too. Learn in love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light in all you do. Love.
Now is the time I'll pass these two beautiful pine needle baskets through the room to sustain all that we appreciate here at the Unitarian Fellowship. And one thing that I appreciate so greatly is our talented pianist, Renee Riesner, who will be playing a Mozart piece for us now. Kelly Richardson McBee wrote for us as she thought about today's service. Pagans in the Northern Hemisphere recently celebrated Beltane, a celebration of coming fertility, of coming spring, fertility, and sacred sexuality. How do we, as Unitarian Universalists, balance and temper the sacred with the mundane in our own sexuality throughout our lives? Our program today is going to consist of four reflections. The first of those reflections is by Christopher Renner, who has now been an instructor in the Our Whole Lives program for several years. How many years, Christopher? Oh, wow, that's great. Wonderful. What a gift to our children. Christopher, please come up to share about Our Whole Lives.
Good morning. One of the wonderful things we offer the community is Our Whole Lives. And so I'm going to go sort of over what Our Whole Lives is about. Some of you who were here 7, 8, 9 years ago might have heard a similar little presentation by Sandy Nelson. But as I look out on the society here in the United States compared to other societies, and in particular, since I'm half Italian, I'm always referring back to Italy, what I see is that human sexuality has become a commodity here in the United States. It's bought and sold daily by publicity, mass media, the internet, and there are people making big money off of images that are unrealistic, often very misogynistic, and work to shore up the crumbling foundations of patriarchy. One of the things that's really interesting, if you dig down into the people behind the porn industry in this nation, you'll find they're also the people who are giving large monies to the NRA to fight gun laws, and they're supporting right-wing political organizations as well. There's a reason why they present women in the way they do. They don't want women, and especially feminism, to get a root in this country and take away their privileged place. But this costs our nation greatly. According to the CDC, in 2013, a total of 273,105 babies were born to women between the ages of 15 and 19. Teenage pregnancy and childbearing bring substantial social, economic costs through intermediate and long-term impacts both on the parents and their children. In 2010, teenage pregnancy and childbirth accounted for at least $9.4 billion in costs to U.S. taxpayers for increased health care and foster care, increased incarceration rates among children of teen parents, and a loss of tax revenue because of lower educational attainment and income among teen mothers. Pregnancy and birth are significant contributions to high school dropout rates amongst the females. The males rarely take the responsibility for what they've co-procreated. Only 50% of teen mothers receive a high school diploma by the age of 22. versus approximately 90% of women who have not given birth during adolescence. The children of teenage mothers are more likely to have lower school achievement scores and drop out of high school, have more health problems, be incarcerated at some time during their adolescence, give birth as a teenager as well, and face unemployment as a young adult. These are all glaring social realities that should make sex education in our nation a number one priority, in my opinion. But what we hear is an all-out war led by so-called religious leaders to prevent the dissemination of factual knowledge that could help lower teenage birth rates, prevent the spread of disease, and in particular here I talk about HIV and AIDS, and address the crass commercialization of sexuality in the United States. Keeping women in the bondage of teenage pregnancy maintains the economic status quo, where the poor keep getting poor and the rich keep making a killing off of them. Here in our congregation, as well as UU congregations across the United States, we believe that honest, accurate information about sexuality will change lives. In our religious education program, we include Our Whole Lives, or OWL, as we often refer to it, as a means by which children in our community can access information that can and does save their lives and protects them from becoming exploited by the commercialization that surrounds them about sexuality in our society. Our Whole Lives curricula are based on the Guidelines for Comprehensive Sexuality Education produced by the National Guidelines Task Force, a group of leading health, education, and sexuality professionals assembled by the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States, SEQUIS, which is a great website, sequis.org, if you ever have questions, even as adults. They have wonderful information there for you. In every category of assessment, the curriculum meets or exceeds the national standards for sexuality education of the core curriculum K-12. The curricula are broken into four programs that we teach here, K-1, and often it includes second graders as well, grades 4 through 6, 7 through 9, and grades 10 through 12. There is also a young adult program, hint, hint, and an adult program, hint, hint, that are available. Right now we have no one trained to teach either of those curricula, but I'm sure Sandy would be more than happy if somebody volunteered to go be trained. And if you want to talk about training, Kalina and I can share with you our experiences, as are other people here. Carolyn Ferguson is another trained OWL person. It's pretty intensive. You do basically a whole semester in like 3 days. And you start early in the morning and you go to late at night and you get very little sleep for 3 days. But it's a wonderful experience, as you use, and people from the United Church of Christ often come together, since it's, well, I'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, I also see the young adult curricula, which I have reviewed, I think would be a wonderful way to do some outreach to K-State students if our congregation ever thought that might be something to do. And I believe David Jones at the Ecumenical Campus Ministries would also be interested in working with us on something like that. OWL uses interactive workshops and lessons that help participants make informed and responsible decisions about their sexual health and behavior. It uses a holistic approach. Okay, so there's diagrams, there's factual information, but we also look at it as being part of who you are as a human being. We use developmentally appropriate information about a wide range of topics, including relationships, gender identity, sexual orientation, sexual health, and cultural influences on sexuality. What OWL offers our students is accurate information presented in developmentally appropriate ways, effective and emotional learning. There's some guiding values and principles that are based on our UU principles. There's activities that help the participants clarify their values and improve their decision-making skills. It also provides a safe and supportive peer group. What happens in OWL stays in OWL. That's a fundamental rule we have. There's also an acceptance of diversity as we talk frankly about both gay and lesbian and bisexual relationships, heterosexual relationships, etc. And so children get accurate, once again, information about that. There's also a social justice approach to an inclusive sexuality education in that women and men are equal in our program. There's also step-by-step instructions for program promotion, implementation, and facilitation, which we pass out to parents, and parents are part of the program. They sign off. They have an obligatory parental meeting before we begin any OWL session. And there's things that are done at home. There's a take-home aspect that the children then go home, sit down with mom and dad, and talk about what they've done in OWL. And so it is a way to build a stronger family bonds as well. Like I said, the facilitator trainings and continuing education programs are wonderful. If any of you might think that you have time to dedicate to this, trainings are held throughout the Midwest. You can also go to the East and West Coasts. But it's an important aspect that happens. Now, OWL is secular in our approach. We don't bring in a lot of religious ideology. And this is sort of interesting, considering that both the United Church of Christ and the Unitarian Universalist Association developed this program together. The UCC had to reaffirm their belief in the Trinity before they agreed to work with us, though. I always find that an interesting little historical footnote. God forbid they should have some Unitarianism rub off on the Trinitarians. But it's a really good program, and there is a religious aspect book that's apart. So both the UCC and we have programs that go with what we're doing in our OWL program. So we open every OWL program with a chalice lighting. We have a reflective prayer sometimes. It sort of depends upon the age of the group and what we do. But there is a whole series of aspects that help the religious side as well. Basically, what the program boils down to is we look at key sexuality issues regarding self-worth, sexual health and responsibility, and justice and inclusivity. And sometimes, depending upon the age, some of the things we talk about does make the children squirm a bit. There's one young boy who was really perplexed as we went through OWL this spring. He said, "I'm really not ready for this. My mom wants me to do it." And I said, "That's okay. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. You know, if you don't feel like you're doing it." But by the end of the course, he said, "I'm really glad I went through this, because now I know things that my friends are telling me aren't true." That's also very important. OWL recognizes and respects the diversity of the participants with respect to biological sex, gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, and disability status as well. The activities and language used throughout the program have been carefully chosen to be as inclusive as possible of this human diversity that we all live. So who uses OWL besides the UCC and the UUA? Interestingly enough, OWL has made its way into other portions of our society. OWL is used as human sexuality education materials in public, charter, and private schools. It's used in after-school programs. Unfortunately, Big Brothers Big Sisters here doesn't use it, but it has been used by Big Brothers and Big Sisters in other places. Youth groups, homeschoolers use it as well. Colleges and correctional facilities have found it to be an effective thing. There's actually been research done on the impact OWL has long-term on people's attitudes and ideas about human sexuality, which are quite positive. And so I think our challenge before us as a faith community is how we can take OWL beyond our own borders, so to speak, and help more young people receive the information and knowledge they need to lead fulfilled and happy sexual lives, which I think we'll be talking about more today. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Christopher. As a parent, the OWL program here is part of what drew me to this fellowship, because I don't think anything could be more important for young people than having the facts about their own bodies and their own lives. The other thing that drew me to this fellowship is the thoughtful reflections of our members and our friends here. I'd like to welcome Anna Franklin, and her reflection is titled, Sex is a Part of Life.
Good morning. Sexuality. It's very personal. It's the most personal thing I've ever spoken to a group of people on. And I'm hoping, I know that I'm going to be very frank with you, and I'm just hoping that you will forgive me if you feel offended and just go with the flow. Okay, this is just me. I did not do any research except in my life experience. Okay? So, as I see it, we in the current United States of America seem to have sexualized just about everything. We're addicted to the power of sex, even while we find it more and more difficult to capture this power. The more we chase after it and try to bring its magic into our lives, the sadder we become. We have run it into the ground with this obsession, even while technological gadgets take us further away from each other as we communicate in person less and less. We touch each other less, and we make eye contact less. Our conversations are rarely face-to-face. I came of age in the 60s, when free love was the wave we were riding. Definitely. I heard Frank Zappa's album, Freak Out, when it was still underground, with always the famous line, I don't do publicity bawling for you anymore. That wasn't in my script. And though I was slow to accept it, I got swept up by the huge wave of love-ins, free love, yeah, and hippiedom. Okay. I was swept far out on a cloud of smoke. And we all know the higher you go, the harder you fall. So in 1967 or thereabouts, I pretty much wiped out. It was my first affair at the age of 23. Imagine that with all the free love around. It ended in forced sexual intercourse when my boyfriend of 10 months entered my apartment uninvited at 7 a.m. This experience changed the course of my entire life, including my relationships, of course, with men. And yet how common is this very personal form of violence, and perhaps always has been. Sexual violence has long been an unacknowledged epidemic in this country and really all over the world. And how many generations of men and women have become increasingly unable to communicate and be with each other in a free and friendly way? The hippies tried. And I think each successive generation tries in its own way. But I think we have tried long enough under the male-dominated, paternalistic, misogynistic model. Clearly, nothing will change until women are recognized in every way as equal to men. As long as sexual violence is tolerated and shrouded in silence, as long as women are not given equal rights to self-determination and the control of our bodies, as long as this violence continues to be condoned, the discussion of sexuality must include the recognition that these abominations exist. Women's bodies are sacred, as is everything. As is this life we share and the planet we live on. We must find a way to put an end to the self-destruction that we are currently engaged in. And we includes both men and women. Recently, I read about a sad and cynical solution to this issue that has been devised by a man who seems to have forgotten that women are more than just bodies. And this next paragraph is sort of a poetic prose explanation of this. And if you don't understand it, don't worry. Match.com didn't work for you? Why not get your perfect woman on www.realdoll.com? By the way, that's a real website. That's right. For only $5,000, you can pick out her individual traits, take out the RA, to suit your preferences. And you never have to have anything to do with an actual living woman ever again. Forgive me. Some things need to be said, and after 70 years, I have found the courage to say them. Sexuality, sacred and mundane. All things not made by humans are sacred. Being alive, smiling, looking into eyes, eating, having sex. Sex. Sex invented sacred. The sacred union of inhale and exhale. Attraction of opposites. Ecstasy, bliss, pain and sorrow. Giving and receiving. Loving, looking, touching, and breathing. And the sacred. Ever notice how easy it is to change that word to scared? The sacred knows you. Gets into your nooks and crannies, way down inside. Women, you have two hearts, you know. The uterus has been called the small heart. Sex equals sacred power, electric, spiritual, amazing, awesome power of creation, lovemaking, and heartbreaking, our hearts opening to the power of the universe. But power truly can corrupt. Women, sex is among your powers. Own it, respect it, guard it. With care, don't waste it. Men want control. Of what? The sacred? The scared? Groping and grasping for power. Power over. You are mine. I own you. How dare you? Making hate hurts the sacred. Shame, shameless, sad. And, oh, women's bodies, oh, yes, women's bodies, only their bodies. She's a real doll, round, soft, tempting, beautiful, perfect doll, a tender trap. He may lose control, but with her, it's okay. Real women are real people. Scary, huh? OMFG, look at that. Did you see those? Hey, what's wrong, baby? I'm just admiring your... I thought she was a doll baby, but what a whore. Dressed like that? She's asking for it, yeah. Hey, psst, looking for a date? The goddess sighs. Seriously, man? Blows you a kiss and blows you away. Know this, men. Know this, men. Sex is not a weapon to wield or a prize to win. Sex is a sacred gift of love from the universe. Until you learn this, its power will escape you. I call what I just read to you a poem, but I'm not a poet, so maybe it doesn't sound very poetic to you. Anyway, the poem is a combination of thoughts and experiences I've had regarding sexuality. The picture it paints may be a bit mystifying to some. I tried to be clear, but words I chose may not speak to everyone. A feeling I've had for many years is that there is no division between the so-called mundane and the sacred. As I said, anything, everything not made by humans is sacred, and all is one. Separation is an illusion we create with our minds. For instance, the categorization of words like sacred and mundane is an example. And I've noticed how these distinctions, created by using words which artificially separate our world into individual things, can cause us to lose sight of how things really are. Think of the word hand and the word finger, for instance. Of course, we know that the finger is integral to the hand, and even though we have two words, we're clear about this. But it gets murkier when we think of the words body and mind. Because the mind is not a physical thing, we too easily assume a degree of separation between these two integral things. The mind is only separate from the body when the person owning them is dead. And truthfully, even then, who knows? So, as I see it, all is one. Jesus said it, "What you do to my brother, you do to me." Nothing exists in a vacuum. So, if anything is sacred, everything is sacred. And when we live our lives with that in mind, we can create the best possible lives. But we're not there yet.
So you'll see in your program that I'm due to read you a famous poem, Walt Whitman's I Sing the Body Electric. My parents gave me a copy of Leaves of Grass. I think I was a sophomore or junior in high school. And having come after the free love generation, I was a young woman in the 1990s. We were an uninhibited lot, but I always felt there was sort of a dark shadow over the people of my age. And that dark shadow had to do with something that everyone who's spoken thus far today has touched on the commercialization of sex in every aspect of our lives. I found my peers to have an, in my opinion, uncritical, glamorizing attitude toward the sex industry. And I think in reaction to that, I really loved Walt Whitman's sort of earthy, healthy way of talking about the body. So when I offered to read this poem, I honestly hadn't opened Leaves of Grass since about 1997, and I forgot how long it is. So I'm going to ask especially Charlie, but all other lovers of poetry and writing, to forgive me for truncating Whitman's beautiful poem, as I'll read to you just the first opening passage. I sing the body electric. The armies of those I love engirth me, and I engirth them. They will not let me off till I go with them, respond to them, and discorrupt them, and charge them full with the charge of the soul. Was it doubted that those who corrupt their own bodies conceal themselves? And if those who defile the living are as bad as they who defile the dead? And if the body does not do as much as the soul? And if the body were not the soul? What is the soul? The love of the body of man or woman balks account. The body itself balks account. That of the male is perfect, and that of the female is perfect. The expression of the face balks account, but the expression of a well-made man appears not only in his face, it is in his limbs and joints also. It is curiously in the joints of his hips and wrists. It is in his walk, the carriage of his neck, the flex of his waist and knees. Dress does not hide him. The strong, sweet, supple quality he has strikes through the cotton and flannel. To see him pass conveys as much as the best poem, perhaps more. You linger to see his back and the back of his neck and shoulder side. The sprawl and fullness of babes, the bosoms and heads of women, the folds of their dress, their style as we pass in the street, the contour of their shape downwards. The swimmer, naked in the swimming bath, seen as he swims through the transparent green shine, or lies with his face up and rolls silently to and fro in the heave of the water. The bending forward and backward of rowers in rowboats, the horseman in his saddle, girls, mothers, housekeepers, in all their performances. The group of laborers, seated at noontime with their open dinner kettles and their wives waiting. The female soothing a child, the farmer's daughter in the garden or cowyard. The young fellow hoeing corn, the sleigh driver guiding his horses through the crowd. The wrestle of wrestlers, two apprentice boys, quite grown, lusty, good-natured, native-born, out on the vacant lot at sundown after work. The coats and caps thrown down, the embrace of love and resistance. The upper hold and the underhold, the hair rumpled over and blinding the eyes. The march of firemen in their own costumes, the play of masculine muscle through clean-setting trousers and waist straps. The slow return from fire, the pause when the bell strikes suddenly again and listening on the alert, the natural, perfect, varied attitudes, the bent head, the curved neck, and the counting. Such like I love, I loosen myself, pass freely, am at the mother's breast with the little child, swim with the swimmers, wrestle with the wrestlers, march in line with the firemen, and pause, listen. Count. I'd like to ask Kelly Richardson McBee to join us, and she will be sharing a further reflection on Beltane and sacred sexuality.
As I have all these tall people, and I'm so short. As I mentioned in the introduction, the 1st of May was Beltane, a pagan fertility rite which celebrates the union of the god and the goddess in their young adult teenager state. So it follows along nicely on what was said about Owl and about what Anna said in her presentation as well. Beltane is also a celebration of life and by extension sex and sexual union, for without sex there would be no continuing life. Beltane as a seasonal festival falls between spring equinox and summer solstice and at the height of planting season. As a reflection of an agrarian society, the purpose of Beltane was sympathetic magic to ensure fertility of crops and livestock. That magic was found in those young couples making love in the fields and forests on Beltane Eve. And it is through that lens of seasonal energy, Beltane bliss, spring fever, or just plain hormones that I chose to talk about sex this Sunday. Sex, on a whole, is a difficult concept to discuss and define. The attitudes towards it change from culture to culture, from person to person, and over time. Think about your own introduction to the subject for a moment. Sex may not have been part of the conversation in your house. I know it wasn't in mine. We were Catholics. Even though we were Catholics, we were not that kind of Catholic with lots of sisters and brothers. You may have learned about it in a piecemeal fashion, Some of us learned about sex from schoolyard wisdom, school sex education, helpful pamphlets, church abstinence classes, or stumbling self-discovery. Some of us got some version of the talk that was probably just as embarrassing for you as it was for your parents. Some of us managed to get our hands on a couple of very exciting magazines and tried to figure out things from there. Our attitudes towards sex are just as difficult to pin down as well. For some of us, the idea of being sexual beings makes us very uncomfortable. Sex may have been looked at as something dirty, sinful, shameful, or as something that only bad boys or bad girls did. Sex may have been looked upon as a duty or a chore, something that you lie back and think about England, or something that's only for married people. Some of us may have been told that some types of sex were okay, or others were not, or that some acts were permitted and others were just a straight ticket to hell. Others may have looked upon sex as something normal and that something that healthy people did as just a part of life. While our attitudes and feelings towards sex are anything but definite, one aspect of sex is definite, and that it is a rite of passage. A rite of passage, by definition, is an act that only happens just once, and upon happening, some aspect of a person is forever changed. When we are born, when we start menses, when we give birth, when we become parents, when we die, it is a rite of passage. And yes, when we are intimate for the first time, it is a rite of passage. If we look at present-day rites of passage, such as births, baby blessings, deaths, marriages, they often reflect a community sharing and celebration of the transition that has taken place, as well as a sense of connection to the divinity within. In the past, different divinities of birth, protection, fertility, and death all had their places in these celebrations, as well as a connection to those making from one transition from one stage to the next. But what about sex? Where did our celebration of sexual union as a rite of passage go? I share these examples and this excerpt of a book called Celebrating Life from Zipporina Klein. It's a very beautiful book, and it talks about different rites of passage that you can share with your family. Under a full moon in May, a young couple go off in the woods to share their first time together. The village shaman initiates a young woman into full womanhood. Beneath the statue of a goddess, a temple priestess shows her young man the arts of love. All are romantic notions based in part on history, but how about today? Two teenagers, very much in love, decide to go all the way while their parents are away for the weekend. They exchange rings as token of their relationship. Peers in school tease them, more out of envy than of morality. Young men walk arm in arm down the street. They glow with signs of new love. Their laughter lightens the air around them, and some rejoice for their wonderful gift of fulfillment. Two girls smile at each other. They begin to see each other after school and on the weekends. There is a bond between them, and they recognize the love in each other's eyes. Proudly, they become lovers, finding warmth and strength in recognizing their desire in the grand design. A young boy smiles and tells his mother that he likes somebody in school. He tells her he loves the pretty girl with blonde hair and glasses who sits next to him on the bus, and the beautiful brown-eyed boy with freckles who sits next to him in class. His mother smiles. She is happy because he is happy. A young girl, desperate to fit in, goes to a party and tries alcohol for the first time. Not knowing its effects, she drinks too much and passes out. She doesn't know what happens to her until the next day, when half-naked pictures of her are texted to everyone in school. A young boy smiles happily as he sits down in the front row of his evangelical church, where his father is pastor. Every night, however, he cries himself to sleep because people like him are abominations that are damned to hell for people loving, because they are people who love the people they do. A 15-year-old girl leaves school to have an unwanted baby. 2 years later, she is working on the streets of a major city. Her child will bear the scars of her unwilling initiation into sex. A young boy hardly speaks to anyone at school. He is withdrawn and always sad. He fears the night because that is when one of his family members robbed him of all of his choice and control of his body. There are many rites of passage. Not everyone is warm and friendly, and many of them are filled with harm. In a society where sex is often referred to as lovemaking, it seems ironic and unfair that so many are introduced to sex under the veils of shadow, secrecy, or guilt, or against their will. Perhaps even more cruel are the lies that we hear about these introductions, that sex should happen a certain way, it should feel a certain way, one should act a certain way, or one shouldn't do certain things, or it should be with a certain gender. The first taste of sexuality should be fun. It should be joyous, not fraught with ignorance, fear, remorse, or violence. Lovemaking should be just that, an act of love, not of harm. Yet these are the realities of this world. In an age of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Tinder, and many other social media, picture sharing and dating apps, one can order up pornography, insta-dates, and hookups with one swipe of the finger. We can amuse ourselves by posting pictures, having sexy chats, looking for no commitment fun. We can meet for a quick rendezvous, a fling, a weekend adventure, or simply have a non-definable sex-based relationship that defies all labels. We can find just about any kind of pornography we can imagine, and if it doesn't exist, you can bet somebody will probably think it up and post it online. We can divine up any kind of sex we want, but we don't seem to see the divine in the sex that we do find. And it is with an eye toward the divine that I now turn. As pagans, we see each other as being the physical manifestations of the god and goddess within each other. A woman draws her power from the feminine divine and the moon, just as the man draws his power from the masculine divine and the sun. Thou art goddess, thou art God. When I am with my beloved, I see him not only as the physical representation of the god, but I also see him as my beloved, and he sees me as a representation of the goddess as well as his beloved. We see beyond each other, deeper into each other, and we see the divinity represented in each other. And being together, we not only bring joy to ourselves, but we reenact the most sacred of all unions, that of the god and the goddess, the act of creation itself. And that's pretty good stuff on a Saturday night when the kids are not watching. So, now, are we celebrating sexual rites of passage in a way to keep the sacredness of sex? Possibly. Well, I know that sex with my beloved is a wonderful thing, even when it's a quick wink-wink at nap times. In the moments we spend with each other, after we are apart from one another and recognize the divine in each other, are the moments I would not trade for anything. And while these moments are not technically the first moments of that rite of passage, I would not trade them for anything. I would not trade them for all the energy, love, and beauty of the original times. And these are the moments that I would wish for my children to hopefully experience with their eventual beloveds, whether they happen some starlit Beltane Eve or on some other night. And these are also the moments that I wish for you as a congregation to have today and every day, to see the divine in your beloved, to see the divine in each other. And when such moments, these significant rites of passage, are acknowledged as being valid and meaningful and worthy of community recognition and are celebrated before the gods themselves, the act of sex may derive more significance than the usual backseat romp or drunken tumble it currently has now. Thank you.
We do have just a few minutes, about 5 minutes for discussion. Obviously, this is a personal topic, but also a universal topic. So if anyone is interested in discussion, and Kelly, Anna, I would invite you back up if you'd like. Christopher had to leave, or I would invite him to.
Well, I'm sorry, Christopher. It was Larry Weaver. I'm sorry Christopher had to leave because I wanted to... First, there's so much in this program that would be... God, I'd love to talk about. in my 30s, I had the great good fortune to be trained and to lead the precursor to Our Whole Lives called About Your Sexuality. And echoing Christopher's comment that maybe other people in this congregation would like to get training to do that kind of program at young adult or children's levels. Doing that program when I was a single, divorced, 30-something man, and talking about sex each week for several hours with Yvonne Lacey, about 10 or 12 years older than me, prior to teaching a children's or teenage class, actually, on about your sexuality, that just improved my life, changed me, helped in more ways than I can think. This notion that sex is a part of life, it's a part of life that we can elevate to, but it's a part of life. It's a part of life, and it's so wonderful to be able to be so open as you have to be to teach those classes and to deal with talk about it with another adult several hours a week was just wonderful. So I'm repeating myself now, so I'll stop.
And if that doesn't bring some volunteers, I don't know what will.
Kalina Stanton, I just want to say that I think there's two parts that we forget sometimes, that we often make it seem like women are always the victims, but I think we forget that women have a lot of power in a sexual relationship, and I think sometimes we negate our men by not allowing that happens.
This is not going to be a deep philosophical addition. My parents were raised in this, you know, came of age in the 60s and were very liberal, and sex was always talked about openly and with a sense of humor, and May 1st, Beltane, in my house, as in my father's house, his mother used to say this, and I have to edit it, and you'll just have to fill it in. I'm sure you used it, but every May 1st, my dad would say, hooray, hooray, the 1st of May, outdoor starts today.
Frivolities.
And it just, this is the 1st May when my dad passed, and my sister and I, like, joked about how someday we'll be able to share that with our children later.
So I should just say I find it kind of funny because I grew up in I basically grew up going to the UCC church, right? The one time I really went to the Unitarians was to take that class with Larry. Now I'm back here for the first time, and the UUs just talk about sex all the time. So anyway, I'm glad these classes are still going on, so I hope my kids will join in the same kind of thing, because it's a good experience. It's a good thing to have.
We knew you were coming, so we broke the topic out again.
Whatever gets them to come, right?
Literally.
So, it's me again. So, I... someone was talking about... it was Kalina. You said something about the responsibility is on both sides or something to that. And I agree. The responsibility is not only on the man's side or the boy. But one of my observations as I look back on my life is not only the lack of sex education, but the naivete which is... nurtured in girls as they grow up. It's not considered right to explain to girls what the perils are and the actual nature of maleness that they are going to inevitably have to confront. If I had had any idea, you know, it would have changed a lot that I did. So...
So please stand as you're able and join in singing our closing hymn. It's number 347, called Gather the Spirit.
And notice that the page turns before the song's over.
As Walt Whitman said, if anything is sacred, the human body is sacred. We are all sexual beings. We dance the dance we have known from the day we are born that was written into our genetic code. It leads us to connect with the divine that we see in each other and in within ourselves. We love, we make love. From the moment we are born to the moment we die and every moment in between, we are sexual beings. But the question remains, how do we celebrate that first union and remain true to ourselves and remind ourselves of the divinity we have within? Is it a question of being more open about sex? Is it a question of about being more open with ourselves or more open to the possibilities of the wonder of ourselves? What do we do about those who have had no choice or have been harmed in the past? How do they reclaim their sexual sacredness once more? There are, unfortunately, no easy answers, no spells to change what has been done. There are no magic wands. However, going forward, it is up to us to find the means to celebrate first unions, to celebrate the sacred in all unions, and to heal those who have been robbed of choice and dignity, and to keep the sacredness in sex. So as you leave, I wish to share these words from one of the groups that I was with. We always closed out our circles with these, and they are very precious and meaningful words to me. Brothers and sisters of light, you are in our thoughts tonight as we celebrate the Lord and Lady, parents of us all. We extend our blessings to you, your loved ones, and all of those whose lives you have touched. May you have the knowledge to understand your limitations. May you have the courage to face your fears. May you have the perseverance to endure your tribulations. May the Lord and Lady guide you in all things and protect you from harm. Life, health, strength be yours. And remember, you are the divine manifested. Thou art God, thou art Goddess, and together, in all forms, thou art sacred. Have a wonderful rest of the week.